and welcome to Big Gay Energy. I'm Bree.
I'm Theora.
And I'm Caitlin.
Come along with us while we dive into the fun and nuances of queer media. Representation matters, and we're here to talk about it.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If you need to stop at all, just let me know. Okay.
That's fine.
Cheers, queers. What's on the Big Gay agenda tonight, Theora?
Yeah, tonight we are going to continue our Heartstopper season 2 discussion by shooting on over to episode 3 called Promise. I promise this is a great episode, because aren't they all?
I was trying to figure out something to say I promise with. I love you.
Well, how could it be bad? Because, you know, in the last episode, Tao asked Isaac and Charlie to help him with Elle, and it starts off with said help. And this is one of the cutest scenes in the show, where they're like in the art room and they're sitting in front of an easel, and I think it says like Elle date ideas, and they're just trying to help him figure out like what to propose as a date to Elle.
But I love that they're in the art room and it's an easel on a canvas. Like,
it's so perfect.
Their like 5th anniversary gift to Elle.
Is that easel? Canvas. Yes. Or not the easel, the canvas, right? Oh my god. That would be so cute. I hope they saved this.
I feel like Tao's pretty sentimental, so it's probably like in the back of his closet.
Right. Oh, I'm sorry, I misspoke. It says ultimate L date, which is so fucking cute. Okay, and so they're trying to spitball ideas. And so naturally, Isaac suggests this book swap date. And like, the way his face lights up when he's talking about it is the cutest thing. It's so cute. But of course, Charlie's like, that's your ideal date.
I think Tao says that. Is this me?
Oh, the Tao.
Like, I think that's your ideal person.
Right. This is ultimate L date. Help Tao with.
But I love seeing that. And then we do get, he gets kind of a book date later, but.
He does. But I mean, books are art. L might be into it. It's not too far off, but it is super, that is Isaac's perfect date, is a book. Book swap date. Somebody suggests a book to him, which I love.
And they then, should have done painting with a twist or something.
Yeah, honestly.
There's so many, see, you just needed us there.
I know. Tao, can we be your friends to help you? Yeah, painting was supposed to be good because we've seen Tao's drawing skills. He needs paint with a twist. So that equals the playing field between the two of them.
And it would have been better than what they actually did, but we're jumping ahead, so
the idea was there, just the execution was bad. So what anyway, so
Charlie and Nick do?
Charlie and Nick are just basic bitches, because according to, that's what Tao's energy was like after he hears what they do. He's like, you guys hang out, play Mario Kart, go to the beach. boring.
But, I mean, Mario Kart's not boring.
No, it's not. But for Tao, in this moment, he's like, first date ever with Elle. It needs to be epic. It needs to be the ultimate date. And so his thoughts are just like in the clouds. He's like, amusement park, recreating 500 Days of Summer. Like, he's just thinking big.
Go on a hot air balloon.
Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't suggest that. Because, like, that's the level of just, like, idea he's at. So, like, beach, he's like, no, no, no. Knock that up, like, 500 points. Like, what are you doing, Charlie? Not helpful. But it's sad, though, because if Tao would just sit and think about, like, him and Elle, kind of like you did when you're, like, painting with a twist, like, that combines both of your interests, Tao is really just thinking about Elle and how to impress her. And in a sense, he's kind of erasing himself from the equation and just making it all about Elle, which is the problem with the first date.
But it's better than just thinking about himself.
That would be a Ben Misery date.
Yes.
You know, like, he would invite you to a movie that you hated. And he'd be like, whatever, we're watching this.
Nah, he'd invite you to a closet.
Yeah. A dark alley. It would not be good, is what we're saying. It would be terrible. You'd be reenacting a horror movie with Ben. But yeah, so it's already off the bat, like, Tao is just conforming and, like, not being himself. And so it's just, I feel bad for Tao. He's just really scared of, like, losing Elle. And it's just clouding his judgment.
I kind of want to see them all go on an IKEA date.
I mean, I want to see the entire cast in an IKEA. I think that would be fun. Like, screw Paris. Like, let the Heartstopper go to IKEA. That would be hilarious.
You could see all their personalities there. Like, it would be so funny.
Yeah. Okay, what do you see when you envision this?
She does, like, Darcy playing with everything.
Everything.
There's a kids section there. So I feel like Darcy would, like, go there and just be, like, playing with everything. Isaac would probably just be looking at, like, the designs of things and just, like, really contemplating. Charlie would be staring at Nick the whole time.
Yeah.
And Nick would just be, like, a puppy dog, just, like, going around to everyone, seeing how everyone's doing. Let's see. What would Tao be doing? Tao would be misusing things.
Yep.
I'm trying to
jump, trying to jump scare L somewhere in the kitchen area or something.
Or, like, there's, I know in mine at least, there's, like, this whole bin of stuffed animals. Maybe he's just hiding in there.
Yeah.
And he, like, pops up.
Yep.
And then someone definitely throws meatballs and someone else is catching them in their mouth.
That sounds like Tara and Darcy.
Oh my gosh. And then that's someone's trying to get into the kid area, but they're not allowed because they're not children. Like the play area that parents leave their kids at, which is separate from the kids, like, section of the IKEA.
The toy area. Like, yeah. the toys for sale versus,
yes,
leave your tots here while you go shopping.
As long as they're potty trained.
I want to see this. If this fan fiction exists, send it to us. It's really specific. And
if it doesn't, somebody write it.
Oh my god. So, unfortunately, you have to leave fictional IKEA and go back to Truum to follow Nick and Charlie. Because in the last episode, two episodes ago, Charlie rejoined the rugby team. So that's been happening. But now, at this point, it's the end of rugby season. It's already over. But before it ends, Nick does manage to find some time to gay stare at Charlie on the field. And there's some leaves happening. So I'm glad that happened. But the key of this scene is that Nick, at this point, still hasn't made peace with the rugby lads like he wanted to. Because excluding Harry, they're good guys and they're his friends. And so they, on their own, like the non-toxic guys, try to reconnect with Nick independently at the end of this practice. And here they apologize for what happened at the movies where Harry was
you know, Harry going off on Charlie about being gay. And they apologize, and they basically say, like, they're sorry that they didn't do anything, which is a really good lesson. Like, I'm glad they have this scene in here because, you know, you don't always know how you're going to act in moments like that. Even if you understand what's happening is wrong. Like, Harry's their friend. They had seen, they mentioned they, you know, they've noticed that behavior in him, but they never really made anything of it. But when that thing went down with Charlie, it was really apparent that, like, Harry was in the wrong and, like, he has this toxic behavior. And so these guys have recognized that, and they're like, we want to do better going forward. We can't change the past, but we recognize we were in the wrong. We want to do better. And so I love that lesson of, like, that they're trying to state with these guys here. I think that's really important.
I am also, like, kind of proud of them because this is, I don't believe this is the first time that they, like, try to talk to him again. Or, but, like, they try multiple times throughout the show.
Yeah,
and,
definitely.
And they keep trying to get him back because they like Nick and want him as a friend.
Yeah.
And they're, like, trying to prove that they have changed.
Exactly. They're learning to be good allies.
Oh, okay. So also the kid in the front definitely knows that Nick and Charlie are dating because when the tall one says, we know you are really good mates, and you get that whole montage. But
oh my God,
the other kid just looks at him like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, this is straight up from the book too. The good mates montage is one of the fucking funniest things ever. The heroes out there have already gifted because it's so fucking funny. But it's like good mates, and it's like them making out and stuff. Because okay, this is such a relatable thing. Like when you're dating in the closet and you can't, and like, oh, it's just annoying because it's like, oh, you guys are such good friends or whatever, and you like can't be like no, you just have to take it, and it's just it's the worst. And I feel like Nick was feeling all those things when the good mates thing came up. But okay, so then they, okay, so the, at the end of this too, they invite Nick and his good mate, Charlie, to the ends of exams party that one of them is hosting in the woods by his house. And
if you say that out of context, it sounds really weird.
Yeah.
Like they're just, like this could be a horror movie.
It could be. But the goal is to just like burn all of your GCSE stuff and just like cleanse from that big exam.
They really needed the fire department there.
Like, oh my God.
That was a big fire.
We will get to that when we get to that episode, but good Lord, that fire wasn't necessarily humongous.
I think that's in this episode.
Is it this episode?
Well, we'll see.
Oh, it is this episode. It's later this episode. Sorry. We'll put the fire. Yeah, it's unnecessary. So, after that, Nick and Charlie, this part's amazing. This part's hilarious. Nick and Charlie meet up in the storage room. Like, they're putting away all the rugby stuff because end of practice, we got to put everything away. And they're alone initially. And Nick expresses his frustration with people thinking they're best bros. And he promises that, like, look, I'm going to come out to the lads. Like, I'll do it at the party because they'll all be there. What a great time to do it. Because he's pretty certain they're going to find out sooner or later. And probably because they keep making out in public. At school, because, like, which is exactly what they do right here in this scene.
They need to stop.
They need to stop.
But what happens when they make out in this scene?
Well, the rugby lads don't find out about them, but the coach does.
Luckily, it's okay.
It's totally fine because she's an out and proud lesbian with a whole ass wife. So she's like, listen, I understand.
Description with a whole ass wife. But also look at the photo when they show it because it's so cute.
It's so cute. They met playing sports together. So she's probably like, ah, history repeating itself with these boys. It makes my little gay heart so happy. And this scene is really cute too. I love it because, you know, in the last episode, it was very much about family. And for Nick, he has his mom, who's been really, really supportive. But here's another, like, role model kind of figure, like your coach, like somebody you look up to, somebody who like is watching out for you, is trying to make you better. And to have your coach in this situation support you, like she's amazingly supportive and tells Nick, like, if any of the other lads are like bullying you, making fun of you, like you come straight to me, like I'll sort that shit out. So that is so huge, especially with like boys or like men's sports, like being queer in that environment must be extremely difficult. So to have the coach on your side automatically is really huge.
And that's what she talks about when she's like, I had a rough time and I was in the girls rugby team where there's a lot of lesbians.
Yeah. Go watch the World Cup. They're everywhere. And so, and that was hard. So I can't even imagine poor Nick, what you and Charlie may go through. But yeah. So I love that she's automatically really supportive. Oh dear. Last thing about this scene that I think we can both agree on is, okay, the setup of this room. So, okay, so Coach has got a desk kind of like in the middle. Nick's on the opposite side of the desk. There's like a window, the door, and then there's all these basketballs. And they're all sitting on their own individual, like, resting place.
It looks like they put the egg on to, like, dye the eggs.
What it looks like, this little like piece of metal with like a hole in it, and it just sits, and it's every single basketball has their own individual one. Like, to me that seems really weird, unless you're never going to use those basketballs,
because it's also really high.
Yes, they're really high up, and there's not an efficient way to put those basketballs back. Like, if you had like you saw the way they were cleaning up the rugby stuff and putting it away, like there's no efficient way to just like, you have to individually put them back. Like, who thought that was maybe a good idea?
Okay, so, all right, I have a theory now.
Okay.
So each basketball, each year, is she the basketball coach too?
I don't know.
Like, now I'm trying to figure this out. Does she just coach her all office sports? To begin?
Is she like the PE? She might be in the PE, like, she might run physical education and also be the rugby coach, like, after school.
But I'm just going to say that she's the basketball coach too.
Sure.
Okay. Because this is for my theory.
Got it.
I think each year she picks one of like the most promising student and has them sign a basketball. And then those are the display.
They're trophies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. That makes way more, it makes way more sense for those to be display basketballs, not play basketballs.
But also it's a very weird, and because like when you get her close-ups, it's really weird because the basketballs aren't directly behind her and they're like slightly above. It's a very small, I mean, they make use of it, but it's just kind of weird.
Yeah. I just can't get over it, because like aesthetically, I can understand why you would do that, because it's obviously it's a cool shot. And you're like, yes, she is in charge of sports. But practically, it's really weird.
What says sports? Basketball.
Basketball. Would have made more sense. Nope, let's not go there. Okay, we're moving on. Let's go to study hall. So so then we get this like study hall period. Nobody's in the gym, but everybody's in Truum is in different places in the library doing different things. Tao is doing my favorite thing, which is googling how to ask your friend out without being weird. Which it's such a Tao Google search if I ever heard one.
But when he's Googling, you see that another question is how to ask out a friend over text. The answer is you don't.
Yeah. I'm glad he didn't click that one. I'd have been ashamed of you, Tao. You do not do that.
Especially when you know them.
Your ultimate date cannot start with texting said date. Like, just that how that works.
I mean, Charlie and Nick would do that and then just text the whole date.
Oh my god.
It would just apparently be... that's what they like to do when they're next to each other.
Yeah. See, it's too basic for Tao. But speaking of Nick, him and Charlie are in their own section of the library. Nick is moaning on about like studying for his last exam. So we're two exams now for Nick, one to go, and it's chemistry. And Charlie decides to help him prep for this chemistry test rather than write his history paper that's due in a few hours. Like, the history paper he's been ignoring since Parents' Day.
Which is how long?
since Parents Day. Like that exam, that paper has been due since then. I don't know how much time has actually elapsed.
Because in my head, it's months.
Yeah, I know. I don't think it's been months, but I'm not sure. Regardless, though, the most ridiculous part of this entire episode is the fact that Charlie writes that paper in the next hour and then turns it in. Like, if that's all it took to finish this paper, why didn't you do this weeks ago? And then the band with Nick would have been gone.
See, in my head, it took him all day. And then I was trying to figure out how the hell he has time during that whole school day to write an essay. Because I was like, are they just not in classes today?
It might just be a study period that they have. I do not know. We have established very firmly that we don't understand the UK schooling system. We don't. We're trying so hard, but we don't understand it, you guys. We're sorry. We don't. So yeah, Charlie is conveniently not in classes this day and has time to write the paper and turn it in 5 minutes before it's due. And then the bad part about this, too, is when he's making this deal with Nick, he's like, I'll help you study for chemistry, ionic compounds, all this stuff. Nick's like, what about your history paper? And Charlie straight up lies to Nick and says, I already did it.
Yeah, that was wrong.
That was wrong. To me, that was the worst part of this. Like,
he could have been like, oh, I can write that really quickly. Like, I have time to help you. Like, do that instead of, oh, it's already done.
Yeah, but I think that Charlie's knee-jerk reflex and why he did it was that, he's like, if I said all those things to Nick, Nick would then stress out about me finishing my paper and not focus on this exam. He's just trying to do everything in his power to make sure that Nick has no extra stress coming from him. That he, straight up lied to him here. It's kind of fucked up.
It is.
Yeah.
I just also don't understand why he waited so long to get his stuff done.
That's what if you could complete the exam in the paper in half of a school day, because you were helping Nick most of that time, you could have done this weeks ago and there'd be no more Nick ban. I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't.
I don't get it. I assume the explanation is he's in such a dark place mentally. He didn't have the mental space to write the paper. But he managed to do it 5 minutes before it was due conveniently in this episode. So,
I mean, I get procrastination and stuff because I do that as well. But I feel like this is just, he had other things where he wasn't allowed to see Nick. So I feel like that would have been motivation enough to finish the frickin' paper.
Yeah, that clearly wasn't that hard. But anyway, it is what it is.
During that whole conversation, I don't know if it was the whole thing, but at some point Nick puts his head on Charlie's shoulder.
Oh, he does.
In school, in the public.
Yep.
But no homo.
No, no homo. They're not, they're good mates. They're just good mates.
The best of mates.
The best. Speaking of best mates, one of the other cute part, of course, in the library, Isaac's in there because it's a library. So he is bonding with James, who was mentioned at some point prior to this, is James is the only other out gay guy at Truam. So they're adorably bonding over putting together a Read with Pride book display in the library. And they're setting up all these books and decorating it with all the flags. It's the freaking cutest thing I've ever seen. There's Isaac's dream book date. Creating a display like this, Isaac's face is just filled with so much joy.
He's so happy.
I'm so happy for him.
But I also love that they're allowed to have a display like this in their school. I don't think we are in America anymore.
We're not allowed to have books in America, but especially this display, because it's not just books with queer characters. The books they specifically have on display are ones addressing and explaining sexuality. They have the Ace book that comes up again later. They have ones about bisexuality. That would definitely not fly in an American public school.
Yes.
But I love that for them. So they're not studying, but they're making a fabulous use of their time. So Nick takes his chemistry exam. GCSEs are over. All the lads run out of the room, throw their shit up in the air.
we are ready for Paris. Mr. Farouk is like, enough of this shit. Get out of my sight unless you're here for Paris trip. Because we got to talk about it immediately after your exam.
You're getting ahead of ourselves. Because when they're just finished the test, there's this overhead shot. And it's a little askew. I didn't read too much into that one. But the colors are very contrasty. And everything is very uniform. Just like how the test is.
Oh, you mean the one in the gym? Oh, dang. Oh, I like that. Is it supposed to give you anxiety, like you're about to take a test?
I don't know. I just liked it.
I also love, I think that's here. At the end of this, one of my favorite things too, when the exam is over, the coach, because for some, it's in the gym, so she's in charge of the exam, because that's her domain. When it's done, she's like, put your pens down. Nobody in the room has a pen. They all have pencils for this exam. So what was this line?
I forgot about that. Yeah.
It made me laugh so hard. Because it's one of those standardized tests. Where, like, part of the instructions are you have to have a specific instrument. Like, a specific number kind of writing two. Instrument.
Wait. They're universal, right?
They're what?
Number two pencils are universal, right?
Yeah, like, okay. Yeah, like that's what I mean. Like, if it's a pencil, they'll specify pencil versus pen. And then if it's a pencil, what kind of pen? Like, a number two, a number three, like...
Side question.
Yes.
We always say number two pencil. Is there a number one pencil?
I think it has to do with the diameter of the lead, maybe?
But, like, if you sharpen it, it's different, and...
Maybe for, like, drawing?
There's a number one.
In the UK, if you use number one pencil, can you please let us know? We obviously don't know a goddamn thing. So about we school. Should put ourselves out of our misery and just shoot out over to Paris, because we can't with the school. So, of course, we're going to have the joint Paris trip meeting interim, because... everything always happens in Jerome, but Higgs is going too, which is amazing.
I know you keep bringing up that everything happens in Jerome.
It does.
So my theory is boys always get a bigger budget. So maybe they have better facilities and are able to bribe the teachers to do extra things.
I think you are absolutely correct, because patriarchy, Caitlin, you're correct. So Higgs has to get over to Truam, and on the way, Tara and Darcy are having this really cute banter with each other, because that's just who they are. And Tara gets so caught up in the moment of how cute and adorable this is that she says, I love you, basically, to Darcy for the very first time.
Because you're annoying.
Yeah. She was being her annoying self, and she likes that about her. And the conversation itself is really cute, because it's just, you know, Darcy being playful. And she's like, oh, we're going to spend so much time together on this trip, and you're going to get so annoyed with me. And I think that language is really indicative of Darcy's fear.
Mm-hmm.
Because Darcy has this default where basically she uses humor to kind of, like, keep things surface level and to, like, deflect her own feelings. But, like, although she's being humorous in this conversation with Tara, her insecurities really creep into it when she's saying that. And the I love you comes out because Tara is trying to assure her, like, I love you because you're annoying, which to me translates into I love you for exactly who you are. And I don't think, I'm not sure that really dawns on Darcy fully, because to Darcy, and we'll get into this as the season goes on, Darcy doesn't feel like she's always being herself at all times. So, like, this was, like, huge. Not just the I love you, but the implications of, like, I love you for you, I think are too much for Darcy to really process.
Because she's also still hearing because you're annoying.
Yeah, that's true. Which is her school persona, right? That's who she is at school versus her home life is a totally different story. Yeah, so poor Darcy. And Tara can, like, see the way Darcy's face just completely changes. Yeah, so, like, Tara starts, like, backtracking, because, like, Darcy can't process this. And I think that while Tara was doing that to kind of, like,
get Darcy off the hook, because in a way she's like, oh, that was too much too soon, mm-hmm. kind of thing. She's freaking out. I don't want you to freak out. Don't worry about it. I don't really mean it like that. It was just a casual. It was casual. You know, I'm just kidding. You know,
whatever. Oh, yeah. So casual.
So casual. So it's like we're gal pals, you know? I think Darcy, unfortunately, takes that as confirmation that, like, nobody can ever love me kind of thing, because mm-hmm. from what we know from her home life, like, it's not a loving environment. And so I highly doubt she's really heard those words genuinely spoken to her. And so to have Tara say it and then immediately backtrack, I think that, like, was a little triggering for Darcy, you know? And
and then so Darcy just, like, basically, like, okay, walks away, and then tries the humor to cope with it by telling Sahar prom should be vampire themed.
Yep.
Which she really wants this vampire theme, because it comes back again.
She wants vampire theme. She throws out pirate themes.
Like, she wants going, like, a 5-year-old boy's birthday party.
Yeah. No, that's, I'm surprised she wasn't, like, Marvel themed at one point. But she does bring up Mario and Peach. So, like, yeah, you're right. It is like a boy's birthday. That is Darcy in a nutshell, to be honest. And Tara is understandably completely confused by this, what just happened. Because, like, none of this was planned. And then the reaction was just, wow. But I think Tara in this moment, it's kind of maybe starts to become more apparent to her that the two of them don't really have meaningful conversations with each other. Or it's rare that it happens. Particularly ones that are about their feelings and how they're feeling in the moments. So poor Tara, she also feel like doesn't know what to do with this, but instead of, like, jumping into, like, clown mode, she just looks really crushed after this happens, which is really sad.
Yeah. And she looks like that a lot this season.
Plot one. But of course they did. Yeah, no, she does. She just looks really crushed this whole season. And this makes me real sad. And I think Darcy is too, but just doesn't show it.
Yeah.
You know?
I want more for them next season.
Me too.
Me too. But during the meeting, I don't know if someone might have asked Isaac what he's reading, but the book Isaac is reading at the meeting is called Book Lovers by Emily Henry. And the rights were sold to make it into a film soon. So
ooh,
you can look forward to that.
I hope he's in it.
That'd be cool.
Meta. All right. So at this meeting, another cute thing that happens when they finally get inside and sit down, James comes over to invite Isaac to the big bonfire party that's happening. And he's like, yeah, you should come. And all your other friends that are staring at us having this conversation.
Oh my gosh, I love that. It always makes me laugh when someone then realizes there's more people and, like, oh, okay.
Gotta love that tunnel vision. It is really fucking funny. But something that people don't miss is the fact that Tao is not with them, and everybody's like, where's Tao? And so this whole meeting goes through where Mr. Farouk and the art teacher, whose name I forgot, I apologize.
The art teacher? I can't remember his name.
I'm so sorry.
I keep wanting to call him Ben for some reason. So my notes are always like the teachers, or Farouk gives the art teacher so bad.
I love them though, to be clear. But I just can never, his name doesn't stick for me. I am so apologize. It's because everybody keeps saying Mr. Farouk over and over again, so his name is more in my brain. But at the meeting, basically they're like, okay guys, well, when we're in Paris, you guys are gonna have to be roommates, and girls with girls, boys with boys, there will be no cross-gender sharing.
Oh no,
which
cries and lesbian
cries and lesbian. So the girls all decide to decide to room together, so it's gonna be Elle, Tara, Darcy, and Sahara, and then for the boys, Nick, Charlie, Tao, and Isaac. And the saddest part of all of this is when the teachers are like, okay, break and find 4 people to room with. We shoot on over to poor Imogen, who gets ditched immediately by Ben, who she's sitting with. And she's just, like, sitting by herself and, like, looking around. Like, she's like, I don't even know who to ask. And girl, I've been there so many times with this. I would just, like, assign us roommates. Like, don't let us pick.
Yeah. So this is something, like, we were talking about how she doesn't really have friends. So, like, I've been in her place where you see, it feels like you have friends, and then, but the minute their actual friends are around, you're ditched. So, like, yep. This is kind of what that's like.
That is exactly what's happening.
She's with Ben. I mean, like, what would happen if she was at that table? There'd be five girls. Like, what, like, that would be really left out.
Yeah. I feel like, though, if she was near them and, like, hanging out with them more, those girls would have tried to find somebody for her. Because, like, to room with, because that's who they are. But that's not what Ben does. Ben's just like, whatever. It completely blocks out Imogen and is trying to find himself something. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it just, her loneliness. I've been there, girl. It breaks my heart. Somebody hug her.
I want to hug her. I'll hug everybody.
I know. I want to hug all these people. They're all so great. All right. And then once the Paris meeting concludes, we all have our roommates. We never learn who Imogen rooms with, but I assume she has roommates.
Maybe she got a single.
That would, honestly, I'd be down for that. But anyway, when that ends, everybody leaves wherever they were. And finally, we see Tao. And the reason why he was missing, because he has to ask Elle out on the ultimate date. And I have to point out,
very publicly, again,
it's the ultimate date. So he shows up spiffy AF with sunglasses on. And it's after, so this meeting happened after school. So it has to be nighttime, logically, or getting close to nighttime. He's got sunglasses on. He's got this, like, these nice clothes on. He looks all spiffy. He cut his hair. He has a dozen red roses, and he's just standing there. So it's like the most out of character Tao we've ever seen. And this is the first time Sahara's ever seen Tao. This is what she's seeing. So I love that this is her intro to him.
I mean, I feel like she's kind of used to the rest of the group at this point. She's like, this is normal.
I mean, if you're friends with Darcy, this is super normal. If Darcy's like trying to convince you to make the prom vampire themed, this is normal. And so
Tao is accepting that vampire theme.
Yeah. Well, I think, okay, I think she was more on board with the pirate theme because of swords. Vampires don't hold swords. Come on, Tarsi, know your audience.
I mean, they could.
If they were vampire pirates, maybe. Anyway, so Tao asks Elle out, and he's like, do you want to go on a date with me tonight? Which is really short notice, but yeah. Also, Elle says yes.
I need 3 business days to make plans at least.
Yeah, because like Tao is like dressed for the date. He's like, I'm ready to go. Let's go right now. And Elle's like, I just got out of school. What did this mean? I'm still in my uniform. She's like, at first, she's like, what is happening?
I'd be like, can I have a nap first?
Yeah, like, like Saturday, let's go tomorrow.
But it's also eagerness. Elle takes forever to respond and just like kind of stares at Tao, and I feel bad for Tao because he's probably regretting everything in that moment.
Oh, probably. Because clearly he put so much thought into just asking her out, and like he cut his hair, he got new clothes, like he got the flowers. He did all the things. Like he's just like, oh no, where did I go wrong already? We're not even on the date. Which makes the date even sadder. So Elle says yes, and and Tao picked a cinema date because they both like movies. So good thought. And Tao meets Elle in front of the theater, and they go in together, and the butterflies follow Elle inside. So like it's showing that like she's really happy and in her Tao feels about this date. But the date begins with Tao buying tickets essentially to Elle's favorite movie, Moonrise Kingdom, which is a film that she knows that Tao hates. But again, just like everything else, when he, you know, since the beginning of the episode, like Tao's really focused on making this Elle's perfect date, like taking himself out of the equation. And he's just trying way too hard to impress her
to a point where he's behaving like a completely different person. And Elle, because she knows him so well, picks up on that immediately, and it sours the date for her. And I think that the fact that she sees Tao changing kind of like because of her in a way, almost reinforces to Elle throughout this date that like this crossing the line from friends thing is definitely a bad idea if it's going to completely change Tao into somebody I can't recognize, you know?
Yeah. Have you ever seen a movie with someone where you liked it, but the person you were with hated it so much and wouldn't stop complaining about it, and you had to just listen to them complain about it, but you actually liked the movie and you're just getting really pissed off? Because that's what I feel like Elle feels like right now.
Yeah, and I feel like she has already gone through this with this movie, because she's like, I already know you hate this, and now they're reliving it. You know what I mean?
Because yeah, like, so she's probably just thinking about all the things he hates about it while watching it.
Yeah, well, probably. And then what happens right after the date ends? Exactly what you says. Tao's just like word vomiting everything he hates. You know, and I was like, I just watched my favorite movie. She's clearly smiling, enjoying the movie, and then is brought down by Tao's rant at the end. During the date, though, there's a lot of like cute, awkward stuff, because it's like they're both their first dates, period, I think. And so like the thing happens where they're like trying to hold hands and things like that. And I think this whole plot line is really important with the two of them, because it's a human thing. It's like this trap we fall into when we're trying to impress somebody else so badly that we're just willing to like be chameleons and conform to like whatever it is we think the other person wants us to be. And for like Elle and Tao, like the irony of that really is the fact that they are drawn to each other because of exactly who they are, and not when they're performing in social circles and things like that. Because anytime you see them outside, like remember like when they were getting the milkshakes and they were doing that like fish hook dance with each other, just naturally, that's just how they are with each other, and they're just giggling and having fun. Like they're into each other for who they are when they're not performing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Ugh. And so like and the two of them, I think, are the characters that are most secure with who they are, like at this point where we are in the story, because they're constantly just unabashedly themselves in public. And that's an admirable quality, like to have that kind of confidence. And I think that's something that they both like in each other. So yeah, this date was doomed to fall apart by the fact that Tao just was not being himself at all. And just so the date, despite the hand holding and the cutesy stuff that did happen, it falls apart because of that principle. And Elle does call out Tao for just centering the date around her, when she's like, we should do something we both want to do, not just me. Because it's not fun if you're just centering this on one person. Like, they're not the type of people that like that. I feel like if Imogen was making a date for Ben and like was like, let's do something together, he would hate that, versus like centering the date around him because he's an egomaniac. But mm-hmm. these two are not. And so it just...
They yeah. should have went to a brand new movie so they could get dinner afterwards and analyze it together, because we've seen them do that together.
Yeah.
And that's what they love. But, and I guess Tao would have thought of that if he wasn't trying so hard.
I know. He just...
Also, yeah. Something that really confuses me is that he cuts his hair, but earlier Elle said that she likes his hair long.
Yep.
So, like, he wasn't he thought that's what she wanted, but she literally told him that she didn't want him to cut his hair.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where he was just so in his head that he just like blocked everything out. And that was that he went on a Google rabbit
hole. The internet told him to cut his hair, and he cut his
hair. The internet told him, and he's just like, this is what girls like. I can't mess this up. Cut hair.
Also, I love the comically large food they have. I feel like the only Seriously. Thing they could do is to signify how outrageous the food is at movie theaters. But their drinks are so small in comparison to, like, this large nacho thing.
It was a normal-sized drink with, like, a triple X popcorn and a triple X, like, nachos. And they ate, like, all of it. So kudos to them. At least the food was good, I guess.
Yeah, I guess they really don't need dinner now.
No. All right. So they, so even though the date went poorly, at the end of it, they still decide to go to the bonfire party together. So we kind of cut over to see what everybody else is doing at the bonfire before they get there. And we have James and Isaac immediately are just like, go off and do their own thing. And I love when they run away and Isaac is like, oh, we're running. That's one of my favorite moments.
That's adorable. So adorable. Oh,
shush.
Oh. It's so adorable.
But even if they are just friends, they're still adorable together. But I Isaac agree. Needs a friend who shares his love of books because it is really tiring to only have friends who don't like what you're most passionate about. Because like I've always like been obsessed with TV and stuff, and I would want to talk about it nonstop, but I had no one around me who wanted to talk about it. So I think that's why, especially in the beginning of this podcast, I cried a lot in these things because I was just so happy to have people in my life who wanted to talk about the same things that I did. And it's, you need it.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Because I've seen stuff online when people kind of talking about the friend group because, okay, let's think about their friend group for a second. So Tao and Charlie became friends like when they were little because they were paired together in school and they bonded over a shared interest of Radiohead. So it's established that Tao and Charlie have things in common. We never learn about how they became friends with Elle or Isaac, but it seems like Elle and Tao have that art thing in common and movies in common because we've seen them independently by themselves sitting down watching movies. Where does Isaac really fit in?
I feel like they got partnered up with Isaac when they were like older than when Tao and Charlie became friends, but it was still like that age group where you like get paired up with someone, you're like, okay, we're best friends now.
Yeah. But I'm just thinking on like an interest level, like do the other friends share his interests? You know?
It really doesn't seem like it.
Right. I gotta read that book. But about Allred, what is Isaac is based off of. But yeah, so I'm really glad you brought that up about James. Like, if James came into the fold in the like queer friend group, that would be perfect because like you said, him and Isaac actually share, you know, the love of books together. And like I think that's probably why now that we know what we know about Isaac, I think that's probably why he lit up with the like date idea. Cause he's like, oh, you pick out books for each other and then you exchange and then read it and then talk about it. Like, yeah, he probably needs a friend to talk about books with. Ugh. I do love them as friends. I really do.
Yeah. No matter what, he needs James.
He does. Okay. But we have to talk about Tori now.
Yes.
We have to talk about Tori. So Tori shows up with Nick and Charlie. And okay. Now we have to get into the straw theory. Because I was always like, why is she always has a straw and a drink. And now I know from reading Solitaire that her favorite drink is diet lemonade. And she's always drinking it. And she does drink it with straws. But there's a theory that YouTube friend. Oh my God. I'm going to butcher this. I'm sorry.
I can try to say it for you if you want.
Do it.
Annika Oosterink.
Yes. Love you, and love you for all the comments you left on our videos about the Heartstopper stuff. Because she pointed out this, didn't mean to presume. They pointed out the Tori straw hypothesis, which is that when Tori has her drink and her straw, she is an even-tempered human being. When she does not have her drink in her straw, she's murderous and has murder on her mind. Because in this scene, she does not have said drink and no straw. And what happens in this scene? She basically threatens Nick. She's like, take care of my brother, I'll fucking kill you. And later, in the bonfire party, when Nick is looking for Charlie after he lost him, she has her little drink
and she's much less murderous with Nick, even though he broke his promise and lost Charlie.
But it's okay.
I think that theory tracks. With
it does. And there's another scene where it tracks as well.
Without the drink?
Yeah. Without the drink. Oh, yes, because it's with David at that scene.
You're so right.
Straw.
That was when she was at her most murderous, because he's a dick.
Yes.
Yeah.
He deserved it.
Mm-hmm. I almost wish she had the drink and she could have poured it on him. But Tori loves her diet lemonade so much she wouldn't waste it, so it kind of made sense. Okay, so Nick and Charlie. So they're there together. And from the beginning, Nick doesn't seem okay. He says he has like a headache, which is not something Nick, he's not somebody who gets chronic headaches from what we can tell. And immediately Charlie's like, cool, do you want to leave? And Nick's like, no, we're going to have fun. I'm here. I'm going to tell the rugby lads everything's going to be great. But it does not seem like everything is going to be great. It's like off to a bad start, like already. And so they kind of like wander into the party, and they of course find like a secluded area in the woods, not by the bonfire, where they're kind of like doing their own thing and being cutesy. And near them is Sahar and Tara. And Tara's on the phone with Darcy, like obviously asking like, where are you? You're not here. And we find out from their conversation that basically like Darcy couldn't get a ride out to the woods. And I assume it's because her mom refused to take her, because we know what we know about her mom now. But Tara's like, I don't understand. Like, if you couldn't get a ride, why didn't you just tell me, like ask for help? Like, it also seems like through a lot of these conversations too, that Darcy's not somebody who asks for help.
It's very independent.
Yeah, and I think maybe she had to be because of her home life.
Is her mom really taking care of her?
It does not seem like it at all. Like, it seems like Darcy's very much on her own a lot more than she should be. And Tara obviously doesn't know any of this about Darcy's home life because she won't talk about it. And so she's just, like, frustrated, and she's expressing that to Sahar, and she's like, I don't understand, like, why she wouldn't just let me help her. Like, I would have brought her here, we would have fun and stuff. And Sahar says, well, maybe she's just embarrassed. And so like it's interesting that like Sahar can kind of see like a little bit of what's going on with Darcy, and Tara doesn't really see it. And what I find interesting about Darcy's situation, it's like the opposite of what's going on with Tau and Elle, because Darcy is somebody who performs to conform at home, to like appease her mother, who's like homophobic and terrible. But while she's at school, she's unabashedly herself, and that's the thing that like Tara loves about her. And I think what really happens with her this season, and what's starting to happen now, is that she's struggling with that separation of like who I am at home and who I am not at home, basically. The closer she gets with Tara, because Tara genuinely wants to know every aspect of Darcy, and she wants to spend a lot of time with her, and like, you know, that's kind of why she wanted her at the bonfire and all that stuff. And it's pretty clear from this conversation with Sahar, like when Sahar says, oh, Darcy might just be embarrassed, and the way like Tara kind of like lights up, that she's super attracted to Darcy's confidence, because she says, she's the most confident person I know, nothing embarrasses her. And she's like beaming when she says this. So, like, I can kind of see, like, why Darcy would kind of be scared to, like, confess all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very evident that, like, Tara does like that about Darcy, like, a lot. Like,
yeah, Tara talks about it a lot.
Yeah, exactly. So, I think that kind of, like, adds to the complexity of, like, Darcy's situation and, like, why she's just, like, I'm not going to tell you everything. And I'd rather just not go to the party at all than, like, have all this home life shit come out to Tara by accident, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it sucks she's not at the party, but like I can see why she would elect not to go than like bring Tara into her home life BS. Ugh.
I feel really bad for Darcy.
I know, it's awful.
She deserves to have an Olivia Colman.
Oh my god, Olivia Colman should just adopt Darcy and get rid of David.
Yes, Darcy can have David's room.
Yeah, for real.
I'd love that.
I like that idea. Darcy and Nelly would get along too.
Oh, Yeah. Do you imagine family dinners too?
Oh my god.
Cute.
That'd be so cute.
Darcy just trying to feed Nellie under the table.
Oh my god. She absolutely would. Speaking of cuteness. So, like 5 feet over from where Sahara and Tara are, Nick and Charlie are being the cutest thing on the planet and just like giggling and taking pictures and stuff. And while this is happening, Charlie brings up Paris. And so Paris has been this like goal for them for like, we're going to come out, we'll be out by the time we get to Paris, because it's like the city of love, and we'll be out in public, and it's going to be great. Like, exams are over, new year, new us, out and proud kind of thing. And it's really clear by watching Nick that, like, the Paris deadline is, like, stressing him out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he... Oh, dear. Oh, wait. I lost myself.
Mm-hmm. It's okay.
Okay, so he's like, he's got a lot of pressure on him, and he's all the more determined to like tell the rugby lads at this bonfire party so that like Paris can be a reality. So he finds them at some point during this party and is like trying to tell them, he's like, hey, I got something to tell you guys, but it's like they're in the middle of a party. Like, this is a bad idea. Like, everybody's like screaming. There's like a giant fire the size of my house. Like, this was a bad setting.
The size of my house.
Where did they get all this wood?
Also, like, are they burning tables and chairs as well?
Don't know. It's like straight up plywood creating this like bonfire. It's like burn a witch at the stake type of bonfire.
It's insane. How did the fire department not show up at all?
They must be deep in those woods.
Which is even more dangerous because of the trees around them.
I know. This is a terrible idea. And clearly not sanctioned by, like, a forest ranger. And so, anyway. So he's, like, they're in front of this giant fire. And, like, Nick's trying to psych himself up to tell the rugby lads. And Harry shows up. And so, like, Nick keeps getting in this pattern where he's, like, getting really close. But then, like, here comes in another reason for me not to do this. And so, like, it's really, really clearly difficult for Nick to, like, just do. It's not something you can just do. It's not a rip the Band-Aid off thing. Like, it's really harder for Nick than he anticipated. And it's, like, stressing him out to the point where he's, like, sick. Which is sad. And, like, coming out shouldn't be like that. You shouldn't have to do it at all. But, you know. Yeah. I feel so bad for Nick. But at some point, Tao and L make an appearance. And actually, let's just finish the Nick and Charlie thing. I didn't mean to do that. Anyway, while they're doing that, though, and Harry shows up, Charlie shows up because they got separated for a hot minute. And Charlie is the one who, like, he couldn't do with David. He sticks up for Nick against Harry and tells him to fuck off or whatever he says. Which, I'm going to hydrate for Charlie. That was really big of him to do that.
I think he told him to piss off.
I know. Means the same thing.
But I'm trying to figure out the right words, Theora.
Piss off. But I think that's, like, Charlie redeeming himself for, like, what happened with David when he couldn't, like, save him. And another thing I really like about that scene, too, is, like, when Nick is having that, like, internal montage of, like, basically all the biphobia, like, going through his brain, where mm-hmm. he's, like, he has a picture of Tori being, like, oh, you're bi, so you're gonna cheat on my brother, that's what that means, and, like, Imogen being, like, you're not just gay, his brother, pick a side, and then it ends with Charlie being, like, well, you promised me you were gonna come out, and I think that's really the crux of it all. Like, it's not just the bad reactions. It's the biphobia, I think, is getting to him. And then the pressure from, you know, not the pressure, but Nick feels like he's letting Charlie down because this is so hard. And he hasn't accomplished what he said he would accomplish by the Paris trip, you know? And Nick clearly cares so much about Charlie, and he would never let him down if he could help it. And I think that's really what's upsetting him the most. It's not the coming out, it's the letting Charlie down part,
which is what Charlie's been trying to avoid.
I know. And it's just like, there's some things you can't avoid. You just...
It's a difficult situation.
It really is. Ugh. But before that bonfire, I forgot to mention this part. There's a moment where Isaac and James are just like talking to each other and like having fun. And then Isaac glances at this couple making out nearby and then quickly looks away again. So like Isaac's journey highlight.
But also I feel like he's thinking, can people just keep their hands off each other for like 5 minutes? Because these people, they can't just be. They have to be with someone.
Yeah. It's just teenagers. Just teenagers. Okay. And so backtracking just a little bit. I guess at that, to end that scene. So at this point, Charlie's like, Nick does not look okay. And Nick is like, I feel ill. I can't do this. And so Charlie goes to like take Nick away and they kind of leave. But before we get to that point, we have to talk about the L and Tau stuff because they do eventually make their appearance at the party. Like it's already like full swing. This is when the bonfire gets lit.
And that must have been an awkward car ride there.
Oh my God. It must have been. I hope Tau wasn't ranting about that movie anymore.
It was probably dead silent.
Unfortunately, I think that's exactly what it was. And who is there at the party? But it's Naomi and Felix. And Tau immediately is just immediately insecure because to him, they threaten, they're like, they're the new life that Elle is leaving him for. So that's the breaking point. And they get into the argument about this. And ultimately, Elle's like, look, this is too much. If I'm tired of feeling like crap about this. This date was a disaster. Romance ruins friends. Let's just end this now before this goes any further. And she just storms away to hang out with her art friends. Meanwhile, Tau is kind of just standing there, kind of lost in himself. And at this point, Charlie is looking for Nick and happens to find Tau first. And I love their moment together because Tau just is fully insecure about himself and has a bit of a breakdown. And it basically is just like expressing things like, I'm not worthy, who could ever love me kind of stuff. And Charlie just hugs him and reminds him, you're amazing and I love you. And I love that scene between the two of them because romantic love is not everything. Like love between friends sometimes is more important. And so to have Charlie, who's known him for so long, be like, remember who you are, Tau. You're awesome. I love you. Like, I love that scene kind of before Tau leaves, like with those two.
Tau, I mean, I know Tau is like worried that Elle is changing, but I mean, she is because they're growing up. They're all going to change. But she's finally starting to find her place and a place in the world, basically, with the help of this new school, which is shown with the friends being there. Like, I love seeing her with them because you can just tell, like, that's where she clicks. Elle is changing and Tau wants things to stay the same. So he is stifling Elle by not allowing her to find her place and grow into herself. Like, I know it's really hard to be like happy when there's like new friends around. Cause like, I would feel the same. I'd be like, oh, they're taking her away from me. But I think he needs to look back and see how happy she is and take that with how she's not going to just leave him. But it's hard to say when you have those issues.
Yeah. And I think he gets there eventually, but coming off of that disaster date,
Didn't help.
I feel like he would have reacted slightly differently had that day not been a disaster, you know. He was already feeling insecure and this just like was the bomb on the ship kind of thing. But yeah, and you're right. This is like that point in their lives where everybody is changing and like, you know, sometimes change is good, sometimes it's bad, sometimes it hurts, sometimes it's happy. Like it's growing pains. So, all right, let's go jump to Olivia Colman.
Okay.
So, Nick and Charlie go to Nick's house, and Charlie, this is the scene with the three teak.
Varying sizes.
And the first time we watched this, Caitlin was like, are those all for Olivia Colman?
I don't know why that's why what I thought. I really don't know what was going in my head.
I love that though. She's just a tea fiend.
Why would I think that all three of them are for Olivia Colman?
Because she's the best. Okay. And because she's the best. Okay. So this scene that happens with Charlie and Olivia Colman, where he gives her the tea and then he goes to, they have a little chat and he goes to bring the tea upstairs. The only reason this scene even exists is because Joe, half kidding, but not kidding, was like, I need a scene with Olivia Colman. Like, I need one. And so this is the scene. They literally wrote it because he asked for a scene with her. And so that's why this scene exists.
That's amazing. I mean, technically he has more than one scene with her, but
like one-on-one scene.
Okay.
Yeah. He's like, I want a scene. Amazing. With her. I know. So I love that so much. This little tiny scene is so thank you, Joe.
Next season it's gonna be everyone has a one-on-one with Olivia Colman. She becomes like the therapist or something.
She just runs into Isaac at a bookstore. I think it's reasons.
It's okay to question yourself. It's okay to not feel like everybody else. You will find your place. God.
I really want that scene now, Caitlin. God damn it. Or she's the therapist that intervenes between Sahar and Imogen when they're trying to figure their shit out. And she's like, it's clearly obvious between the two of you, the way you look at each other. Just give each other a chance. Here's some tea.
Look at each other. Look in the eyes. What do you see? Obvious. You see that twinkle? don't forget about your tea. Your tea's getting cold.
It's getting cold. Oh my God. I love her. So unfortunately, we have to leave Olivia Colman and go upstairs.
Olivia Colman is such a supportive queen. That's what
yes, I was to everybody, about. Even characters she hasn't met yet, apparently, according to our fan fiction.
We write so much fan fiction in these episodes.
It just, fan fiction makes everything better. So we can't help it. So Charlie takes the tea, goes upstairs, and Nick's like feeling terrible. So he's just like in bed, like, I need some rest. And they have a chat and they finally like come clean about what they've been feeling and what we've been perceiving that they're feeling. And essentially Nick does confirm that coming out by the Paris trip has been stressing him out. And because coming out to everybody except his mom has been a lot harder than he thought it was going to be, which totally understandable. And to this, Charlie drops my favorite line from Heartstopper, which was originally said by Allred, who is the character that is basically Isaac. And he says, there's this idea that if you're not straight, you have to tell all your family and friends immediately, like you owe it to them. But you don't. You don't have to do anything until you're ready. And in the book, he basically said that to Charlie when Charlie was like really stressed out about like telling Tao, because like in the books Charlie didn't tell Tao he was dating Nick, and so I think it came out about that time. But I just love that line because yes, like unfortunately coming out is a thing queer people do for straight people, I feel like, because straight is the default in everybody's brain, so you almost have to explain like, no, like I'm not the default,
because you don't want someone saying like, oh, do you have a boyfriend yet?
Yes, exactly. So you have to be like, I'm not that. So you have to correct them essentially by doing this. So it's like, but the thing is, I love this line because like you can, like I understand that feeling, that pressure to like, you have to tell everybody immediately when you meet them or like mm-hmm. when something comes up and like, it's almost like you can't do it on your own terms kind of thing.
And you constantly have to do it.
Coming out is a forever thing.
I mean, I feel like it's easier if you have a wife, though, right? You just be like, here's my wife.
That does make it easier. Yes, our marriage is so we don't have to come out anymore.
Or is it just a gal pal that you're roommates with?
Just a gal pal.
We have gotten sisters a few times, which I don't understand. We look totally different. I'm like, how? How? Jesus Christ. But anyway, key message. Don't come out until you're ready. You don't owe anybody anything. I love that. So in this talk that they have together, like, Charlie officially takes the Paris deadline off the table because Charlie wants to alleviate all stress from Nick. And Nick's happy about this and kind of cuddles and, like, kind of goes to sleep. And we get this shot of Charlie's face, like, kind of processing that reality. And it's very clear that, like, Nick not being out is stressing out Charlie. Which, it must suck to be in. I understand Charlie's, like, why he's so stressed out. Because, like, it must suck to be in that position where you're, like, I'm ready to be out and, like, have the person of my dreams be out with me. But they're not ready. And I understand why they're not ready. So it's just, like, Charlie is just internalizing all of his, like, frustration with this. And it's just, it seems like it's just getting worse and worse, like, each episode.
Well, I feel like his first relationship was Ben, and he had to hide the whole time. So he's like, I finally have someone who gets me and who loves me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
they haven't said love yet, but.
Only a matter of time. And the last important thing from this scene is that Nick drops that pet name, Char, when he tells Charlie he's proud of him for telling Harry to fuck off. I love it. If there's any time to drop the pet name, it's then. And their little conversation there is so cute when Charlie's like, I would fight him for you. I would do all this stuff. It's so cute. I love it. Ugh. And that's Promise. Did you like it, Caitlin?
Oh, of course I liked it.
I promise we weren't lying.
Yes. Good callback. I forgot the episode title.
I try. Well, I challenge you to disprove me. That's the next episode.
I was like, I wonder where you got that next line.
All right. Before I start trying to go through all the titles, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. We're excited to keep going with Heartstopper season 2. And until next time, hydrate for lesbian Jesus.
And gay it up all over the place.
Bye. Bye. And with that, we've been Big Gay Energy. If you like this episode, check out all our other episodes on whatever you're using to listen right now. If you're listening on Apple, we'd really appreciate it if you left us a review, no matter how brief. It helps us get into Apple's algorithm to reach a wider audience.
Please feel free to reach out to us. We would love to hear from you about everything and anything. You can find us on all the social medias at Big Gay Energy Pod. Or email us at biggayenergypod@gmail.com. If you'd like to make friends with other queer media loving people, reach out to us to join our Discord server.
If you'd like to support us, check out our merch store or join our Patreon for early access to episodes, exclusive content, and so much more. Until next time, stay safe and hydrate for lesbian Jesus.